Welcome to the Dirt Buzz. I'm Dale Spangler. My guest on this episode is the founding partner and publisher of Meta Syndicate, which is comprised of Meta Magazine and ReadMeta.com. He's also an all-around fantastic human being. Andrew Campo, welcome to Dirt Buzz, and how are things in Denver?
Man, first off, thanks for having me, Dale. I've been looking forward to doing this for a while with you, and congratulations on the podcast. I think you're doing great. Things in Denver couldn't be more beautiful today. We're going to have 70-degree weather. Prior to our call here, I was pulling bikes out of the garage and getting things ready to go riding here in a little bit. But I'm also going to stay put for a minute and watch some Supercross. So pretty good day.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you going to go up to your buddy Jimbo Darvall's place and Camp Darvall and do some shredding up there?
We have that planned for tomorrow. We're actually going to ride some Triumphs today and get up into the mountains a little bit and just do one of those days where we run for the hills.
So you recently, you kind of were telling me that you really kind of reignited your love of riding moto. Like you just had kind of put it away for a while. I'm sure you rode here and there, but not like you used to. You've been riding, you know, your Triumph and lots of other street bikes and multiple different, you know, bikes through the last few years since you started Meta. But what kind of got that back into you? Like just going out in moto. There's nothing quite like it though, is there?
No, man, it's really kind of, that's the thing that has been part of my life since, you know, the second grade. So yeah, I did kind of step away for quite a bit. I had hurt my back and had a couple of fractures in my back a few years ago. Making a return to riding moto, that didn't go so well. But what really got me back into it, was COVID, to be honest with you. Just not being as active as I'd like to be. And I'm not big on like going to the gym or working out and those things, and motocross will, you know, kind of shape you up pretty quickly. So, back in December, I, hit Craigslist and got myself a new 250F and,
nice.
Then my buddy Jimbo, who, you know, he's got a cool property just north of Denver, that we started building a little track up there. And, that was it, man. I think in January, we did 19 track days alone in January, which is kind of unheard of here in Colorado that time of the year, but we got lucky with some, you know, 50 degree days were amazing, but we just hit it hard. And then, man, I've just kind of, I feel like I'm back at some level. I've never been an accomplished motocross rider. I spent a lot of time racing motocross and off-road throughout my life, but I actually feel the best I've felt on a motocross track that I can remember. So it's not bad for an old guy. Feeling good.
Yeah, there's nothing quite like the feeling of riding a dirt bike for getting exercise and just to pump you up, you know. I mean, it's kind of crazy, but the other day I was talking to Chris Kiefer about this, and he's like, "Man, don't you ever like just have like the? Aren't you just jonesing to go riding sometimes?" And I'm like, "Well, for me, I'm just, you know, I'm too overweight, and you know, like I feel like my wrist still wants to go like I used to go, but my body says." Hell no. You know? So,
yeah.
But the same token, it's hard to kind of get over that competitive aspects when you ride motocross and just be able to ride for the pure joy of it. And recently I had another guest on, Dave Selecki, who worked for almost 30 years for Weisco Piston. He calls himself a professional vet practice rider. And I'm like, I just love that term, because it's just like, he doesn't really think about racing anymore. It's just all about going to the practice track with his buddies, hanging out, riding a dirt bike, you know, forget about racing each other. It's just good times.
Yeah, that's where I am right now. And it's the best. I love racing. I hope to actually do some vet races here in the future, but just going out and riding, it just washes everything away. you know,
absolutely.
You work hard and then go out to the track, come home, you sleep well, you feel good physically. And you know, it's kind of, I think I'm in a pretty lucky spot right now because the process of progression is, you know, I'm going through that again, right? Feeling accomplished when, you know, we build a jump and, you know, just getting it down. There was a double up at the track for, first three or four rides. I was just like, man, I don't feel comfortable. Like I was really nervous about injuring my back again. And then, and then one day I just had one of them, those moments. It's like, dude, what's wrong with you? You know? And, got over it, and I've probably jumped it 1,000 times since January. And but it's that's what really is exciting for me right now. It's just kind of, plus we have a private track, so we can just work on sections and work on cornering and feel. Every time I go riding, I feel like I'm getting that much better, and that to me is super enjoyable.
Yeah, it's nice having something so close and easily accessible. Now, what like at Jimbo's place, I think I noticed where that story, the Wheeler dairy killings, or the video, sorry, not the story, but, or maybe there was both. But where did that idea come from? You shot that at Jimbo's place, right?
Yeah, we shot that up at his place. That's something that our creative director at Meta, Ben himself and a fellow named Chris came up with the concept for that.
It's like an original screenplay, really, isn't it?
But the story is from Northern California. It's been around forever, and it was a kind of a new take on that whole story.
I just thought it was just such a unique piece that I was just like, and then I was like, I bet that's Jimbo's place. And then I kind of just figured it out on my own that's where you guys filmed it, but that just looked like a fun piece to do.
Yeah, it was, I'm going to say the timeline was around the 60s, and there was an old dairy up in near NorCal, and there was a legend that the military had a secret like laboratory and they were building, crazy creatures or something. And the laboratory was under this dairy, and one of those monsters still lived. And so kids used to ride their dirt bikes up there, you know, on like a Friday or Saturday night, dare each other to, you know, see who would walk closest to the dairy or sneak in. And, so that's kind of where the story came from, and it was really unique. And I was able to be there for some of the filming, but it was a cool, different take on an editorial and film piece for Meta. I think it was well done.
Yeah, plus probably just a challenge, you know, to do something completely different like that, where you just are fully having the thing scripted and how you guys shot it, and so it just seemed like a fun piece, but. Definitely, like you said, very unique but relatable at the same time. Like when we were kids, we always had those situations where there was the legends of a haunted house or something down the street, where it was just really, really well done.
Thanks. The author on the piece, his name is Chris Nelson. He's really creative dude. He's done a lot of writing also for Iron and Air. And him and Ben came together on it and kind of rewrote it, you know, to fit into Colorado, and you know, they changed the story up a little bit, but it was well done. And yeah, as far as like things, those creative pieces that come through Meta, Ben never disappoints, man. He always has these just great concepts and unique things that I think makes our publication a little special.
Yeah, and that even kind of, to me, like, it sort of reminded me a little bit of the aspect of the piece in issue 20, The Lost Horizon, about the San Luis Valley. And man, I absolutely love that piece too. Cause you know, like you've told me the story, but you know, it's, you have that, you know, piece of property down a little, you know, south of Denver and the San Luis Valley. And that's famous for UFO sightings. And I just was like, that's such a unique twist as well, but I was enthralled when I was reading it. So
yeah, it was such a fun trip. That was kind of, I'm going to say that was the first time after, you know, everything kind of was on lockdown with COVID, that we got good weather and we were able to escape. And, you know, out there it's super remote. So it's, we ran away from, you know, the city and everything else that comes along with that for the weekend. And, we went and searched for UFOs for sure. If you ever go to the valley, you'll be a believer for sure. So yeah, there's great little towns, little legends all over the place. We camped out for a couple nights on my property. It was a great trip. We didn't see any aliens, but we went to outer space. That's a good way to put it. We had fun one night for sure, and you know, let the sun rise and had and out there you see all kinds of stuff. So it's absolutely amazing.
That particular story like sent me down a serious rabbit hole for like I'm pretty sure I burned like an hour and a half on Google Maps just looking in that entire area in the San Luis Valley, and then all the temples, and it's just a very kind of like, I don't know, I guess for lack of a better word, spiritual area, you know, like there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, there is. It's a beautiful area as well. That little town where a lot of the temples are, is a little town of Crestone. Might be one of my favorite towns in Colorado. It's literally, so off the beaten path. There's, you know, there's no stoplights, there's no sheriffs, there's, you know, it's just the community that runs this really neat little town. And yeah, it's Colorado's cool, man. It's got a bunch of neat spots like that.
So that was in issue 20, which, by the way, congrats to you and Ben on that. I mean, that's well, now you're on to 21 already, but I mean, that was obviously a milestone for you guys, you know, the 20th issue. Magazine started what, back in 2014? So here you are, yeah, 7 years later, produced the 20th issue. How's that? I mean, did you think you'd be at this point when you started the magazine back in 2014?
I did, or I wouldn't have done it. I kind of felt like there's something really special about Ben as a designer, as a creative director, as a business partnership or business partner. I wouldn't have done this project with anybody else. And I had been working with Ben, on some other stuff when I was still running Verb back in the day. And I just realized how unique he was. And, I don't know, we talked about Meta for months, of course, and did a ton of research and tried to figure it out. But when it was all said and done, I realized that, you know, print was going to change shape, not necessarily die. And I've been around publishing long enough to kind of see some trends and realize, you know, if we were doing a typical periodical that was, you know, doing 12 of them a year, we couldn't do it, right? Because now everything's, that kind of information's available digitally. But it, I knew it would take time to kind of get to where we are. And it did. We did our first year, we did 2 volumes. Second year, we did 3. We stuck with 3 volumes forever. And then we realized that we could pull off 4. And I think we've been doing 4 volumes now for the last 2 years. And we've always wanted to keep it manageable so that we truly enjoy what we're doing. And that's been a big part of it. But yeah, man, when we set out to do this, I rolled a lot, some big dice in doing it. You know, it's a big time investment, a big risk, all those things. And I was really confident in our vision from day one.
Yeah. I mean, especially when you look back at, you know, like during that period, 2014, there's probably a lot of people that thought you were nuts to try and start a niche publication. And, you know, but I look at it as, you know, it's like, you're kind of like flipping the script, you know, like you're going for that quality over quantity approach where the more long form, the more researched. And I think people are, in my opinion, I feel like people are starving for that instead of these sound bites.
Yeah, for sure. It's proven itself now. And yeah, it seems like we just got started. And, you know, I think it was a year or two ago, Ben was like, man, I can't believe we've been doing this for almost 7 years. And I was like, what? You know, it's just gone by really fast. But it's been really well received. There was a lot of people that are like, dude, what are you doing? Kind of go into print right now. And some of those people were the same people that I had worked with when I launched for Moto back in the day. And they're like, what, a digital publication? You know, as we launched, I'd say Verb was about 3 years before its time in the web space. And, you know, again, we kind of believed in our vision. And, you know, when we decided to move forward with Meta, it was that same kind of felt like, okay, well, you know, this is against all odds. And, you know, to me, I think that's kind of, it was key to our motivation. You know, it's almost like that race mentality, right? Like you want to, you know, people are like, man, this is nuts. This won't work. You'll be around for a year. You know, when you hear things like that, it really pushes you, right?
Absolutely. So the magazine obviously continues to evolve in multiple ways. Like you're getting, well, let's back up a little bit. So we were just talking about how issue 20 came out in December, and now you got issue 21 comes out and you completely flip the script again and you got a totally different format. You went from horizontal to vertical, different paper, completely different vibe.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
You know, this last year, we'll go back 1 year from now. And I was scratching my head, you know, I was nervous. I was like, man, you dedicated, you know, 7 years of your life to this project and now the world's falling apart. You know, where are we going to be? I get kind of worked up. I was a little nervous, you know, I was like, oh man, what's the future look like? What's the future look like? And then, you know, Ben, he's really good at kind of steering me in the right direction. And he's like, dude, we're killing it. Let's not, you know, I told him, I was like, man, I don't even feel like emailing anybody right now, you know, asking for ads or, you know, sending contracts or, you know, it was such a weird time to, you know, knock on doors for business. Right. And, yep. He's like, dude, let's stay our course. Let's use this as an opportunity, you know, this downtime to, you know, recreate, to, you know, do the best job we can do. And man, that little push really got us going. And then, helped me, you know, stay in line. You know, things were super quiet, in the industry for a while, but, man, we stayed on track through 2020. And then, the idea to change format was something I wasn't super sold on, because I really feel like that, landscape is part of our DNA, you know? And, but Ben, I saw him just kind of light up. He's like, dude, I've been playing with some mock layouts and this and that. And we went to the bookstore together and looked for, you know, different formats that we liked. And we found one and, we started playing with it, but it was really the decision to go vertical for me was based on Ben's excitement. It was almost like we were starting the magazine from day one. You know, he's like, oh man, we'll have, you know, full bleed covers and this is how some stories will look. And he was just so excited about it that it was a no brainer. You know, I knew that he was going to take it and do what he does best. And he certainly did. I'm super proud of volume 21. I think it's been really well received. We didn't change paper weights. What we did is we changed, we went from just a raw paper, that we didn't have the best success with the raw paper. It adds girth to the book and it's neat. It feels good, but we went with, a satin paper this time around and the images, The book's a little thinner, although it's the same page count, same paperweight and everything else. You know, paper thins out when you add finishes to it. But the imagery is just super sharp. It feels great in your hands. I don't know. I haven't had any negative feedback so far on it. And super excited to see volume 22. That's in the works right now.
So I don't know if you can divulge this yet since it's top secret probably, but so is it going to continue or is that one and done on the formatting?
We're actually going to a triangle shape for volume 22. yeah, that's what we're doing. No, we're gonna stick it out for a while. You know, we did 20 in the landscape format, and that was a good time for us to make a change, right? We felt like, okay, there's 20 of those. We've always looked at metas, what we refer to it as a print collection. So we want, you know, we want that consistency because literally we do have customers that come back wanting volumes 1 through 21 and they want that collection to sit on, you know, yep, a bookshelf. So we're going to stick it out for quite some time until we feel like it's time to make some changes in the future. So yeah, this new format definitely throughout this year will be there. Probably longer than that. We really like it quite a bit. So yeah, I think what you see right now is what you're going to get for a couple of years at least.
Sweet. Well, the other aspect that I think is cool, how the brand Meta, you know, like, I mean, I guess you call everything Meta Syndicate, right? Now that's kind of overarching. That's the magazine. That's the website. That's pretty much the whole package, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the Meta Syndicate is our, you know, our business title, if you will. The product is Meta. And that's kind of how that rolls.
But what I think is cool is, like, I mean, not only is the magazine a premium product, but you attract premium brands. And that seems like it's continued to snowball for you, where you have these brands, Firestone Walker, 805, Danner, and recently now you have Filson. So it's like not only are you putting out a premium magazine, but you're getting these premium brands involved that in some cases, like a Filson, have really never been too much into motorcycling, and now they're coming out with motorcycle line of, you know, products. So I mean, that's got to feel good.
It feels amazing. I think that the key there is the content, right? The creative direction, the imagery, the storytelling, the quality of what it is. You know, motorcycling can be portrayed in a very beautiful light. And I think we've managed to do that. And I think that is, you know, what attracts brands. You know, if we go back to like when you and I first met, Ed, a long time ago, but, you know, motorcycling hasn't always been, let's say, fashionable or kind of where it is today, you know? Yeah. And I think we've been instrumental in some of that change and inspiration. Right. So it's, I don't know. It's cool. I know for a fact, there's been plenty of people that have picked up Meta that have no history, don't know a thing about motorcycles, but have read cover to cover and really enjoyed what we're doing. So I think it's, you know, it's a mix of those things that have helped us attract partners like Filson. And I think, you know, that's a great one. We've got just amazing brand support from so many great brands. But yeah, it's a unique product in the space, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I feel like what Meta does, and I really didn't think about this until you just said it, is how you portray motorcycling. Like every issue of Meta, for the most part, is always a positive outcome in these stories, you know, that pumps up motorcycling, wants, you know, like people probably, like you said, aren't really involved in motorcycling, but they could pick up an issue of Meta and they can relate to the stories in there because they're evergreen, timeless stories that just, it's good storytelling. So I think that's really incredible. Like, and recently I was talking to someone, they were like, yeah, we're, you know, we need to shed that, you know, old biker dude image, you know, and be more inclusive and bring more people in. And I feel like that's definitely something that you and Ben have encompassed with Meta is, you know, bringing people in, being inclusive, like doesn't matter what you ride, it's about motorcycling. And so.
Absolutely. And you nailed it with being inclusive. And even with, you know, the motorcycle, you know, the Sturgis rider, if you will, we've celebrated some great stories, through, you know, around that genre as well. And I totally respect those guys, man. And that's been our goal, is to celebrate all genres of motorcycling. And, you know, we're chipping away at it, you know, every chance we get. What I've wanted to do from day one is I've had a pretty blessed like career and life, in regards to experiences and travel and, things of that nature. And I'm a softie at heart, but you know, always think about, and I wrote about it in one of our early volumes of Meta, but always for some reason I think about like that dude that's stuck in a cubicle. And, you know, is just doing that 9-to-5 deal and, you know, wife won't let him have a bike. And he just dreams of one day riding a motorcycle, you know, across Wyoming or doing a trip to Baja with his friends on dirt bikes. Like there's so many people out there in the world that probably, you know, have a similar situation to that. And what I wanted to do with Meta is to help inspire those guys to make that leap of faith and, you know, to stop and say, no, you know what, I'm going to do this, you know? And I think we've definitely inspired quite a few people to throw a leg over the bike for the first time, or, you know, to just say the heck with it. I'm going to make this commitment to this trip. That ultimately that's what I want to do. Cause I couldn't personally work in, you know, that type. I would lose my mind if I was in that type of rhythm, life rhythm. And, you know, yep. Not poking fun at anybody that's in that, you know, lives a life like that. But I have a real free spirit, and, you know, I want to inspire other people to try to find that spirit within themselves. And I think we've done a decent job doing that.
Definitely comes across in the magazines too, because I feel like that's another aspect of that, you know, the magazine snowballing is, you know, the more stories you put out there, the more people that come forward and are willing to tell their stories that maybe in the past weren't willing to, because I feel like there's so many stories out there. It's just finding them and being able to pull them out of that person and have them be willing to share that story. Cause man, some of the best things I've ever read have been something that, you know, like a person never even thought about telling their story, but then after they've told it, it's like, that's fascinating. You know, more people probably want to read that, you know? And so kudos to you guys.
I mean, look at social media or Instagram. Like people want to just be inside other people's lives, yep. Right? They want to peek inside of everything. And so you're absolutely right about that.
Well, it's funny how you said, you know, you're a softie at heart, which is one of the things I like about you. And what I wanted to bring up though is, I just have always looked up to you for all the selfless things that you do, you know, like,
thank you.
I mean, this, you know, I was reading this one post and I actually wrote it down because it just really hit me. It says, today I made new friends, saw some great smiles, helped fill a few bellies, and I got to ride my motorcycle. I mean, that is just so beautiful to me. And that's one of the things that I admired about you is like, you know, it's easy to talk about doing something to help people out, but actually going out and doing it, it's a different story. And it's something I'm guilty of, but, there's this Two Wheels for Meals and Adopt a Family Colorado that you've been kind of helping with here and there. But tell me a little bit about that, because yeah, I really admire, your willingness to roll up your sleeves and help people and do a little extra.
I think that all started probably around 2016. I had the opportunity to go to Haiti and help put roofs on homes, set up food distribution programs, helped dig wells for fresh water. Spent about 2 weeks in Haiti, and I went down there. I was like, oh man, this is great. I've always wanted to do something like this and help other people. And man, that trip really affected me in a lot of positive ways. But, you know, for weeks and weeks, I was gearing up to go help other people. And I did, you know, every day we just worked and worked and worked and worked. And, I've never been in an environment like I was at that time. And it's so funny because these people that have nothing, literally nothing, somehow have the biggest smiles on their faces. I mean, all these kids that probably wear the same clothes day in and day out for years on end, live in these orphanages and just don't have anything. It's heartbreaking, but man, they just wear, look to be the happiest kids I've ever seen in my life. But when I came back from Haiti, what I realized is, you know, I'm the one, I helped myself. I didn't go in there thinking, I just came back with a different perspective on life altogether. And
that'd be very grounding, I would assume.
Super grounding. And matter of fact, it took a couple weeks to settle back into normal life here, you know, to walk into a grocery store and see thousands and thousands of options. And, you know, it's a different world that we live in for sure. But, you know, following that trip, there's quite a few homeless people here in Denver. And my wife, she's a school teacher, and they have food plans for underprivileged students and families. And a lot of that food, they're little snack bags, you know, they'll have like some pound cake, a juice box and cheese and things like that. There's hundreds of those that go to waste, more than hundreds of them on a daily basis, throughout the school systems. Not just here in Colorado, I think it's rampant across the country, but long story short, she told me, she's like, I can't believe all this food that goes to waste if the kids don't take it. And so she started bringing it home, bringing these little packages home with her. And I just fill up my backpack because I'm going to pass on my way riding into the city. I'm going to pass, you know, 100 homeless people easily. And, you know, I started just kind of, that's where things started with me. I started stopping and, you know, helping people with a little lunch when I can. And I realized, I've met a lot of people that have kind of been around that community. One of the biggest things you can do to help a homeless person is to look them in the eye and have some conversation and to treat them as a human.
Absolutely.
You know, 'cause, a lot of times they just get passed by, you know, and not every homeless person is deserving by any means. A lot of people put themselves there for the wrong reasons, but everybody has a different story. And if you can help somebody, then it sure makes you feel better. And you know, it's just something I enjoy doing. So I don't know, this last couple of years I got together with, one of our advertisers is a group here in Denver called Writers Justice. And during COVID, when COVID first hit, we were all sitting around on Zoom meetings, like, hey, what can we do to, you know, to help the community right now? And so we created a Two Wheels for Meals program where we're doing some fundraisers, we're doing distribution to, you know, different communities, you know, helped out many different communities with feeding, basically, food distribution programs. And we've been kind of just keeping that on our to-do list ever since. And we're going to do something in May for I'm going to do the first meta ride that I've done in a year will take place in May for an organization called Sophie's Neighborhood. It's a little girl that's out of Boulder, Colorado, named Sophie, that has a super rare disease. Only 30 people in the world have ever been diagnosed with it. Whoa. But it's called MCTO. It's really sad. But I came across a flyer a couple weeks ago while I was in Boulder at the printer, an awareness flyer for her foundation. Then I reached out to her mother and told her I wanted to, next time I hosted a ride, I wanted to have some true meaning. And so we found an amazing cause. They're super receptive and excited for our support. But I just personally, I want to help wherever I can. And when it's all said and done, when you're gone from this world, for me, I want to leave a little bit of a legacy, you know? And I think that working on things like this is my way of doing that at some level.
Cool. That's such a cool story. I love it. You know, and I remember numerous times, texting you or something, and you're like, telling a story about how you stopped on the way to work and, met some new people and handed out some food. And I just think that's, it takes a lot of courage to do that. Like I said, it's easy to be at that stoplight and maybe give the person a nod, but, and then leave and move on. And so,
yeah,
I think it's just really admirable, yeah, you're one of those people anyways. I look at you like, you're like a senator. Everywhere you go, you make friends. And every time I've ever been around you, like, it seems like you're always meeting new people and striking up a conversation. And I think in your position, it helps a ton.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. I do my best to try to do my best. Right. So that's, it doesn't happen every day, that's for damn sure, if you can find time to try to help somebody else, you should be doing it. If you think about the homeless community, anybody that's listening, the number one thing that people need in the homeless community is socks and backpacks. So that's another thing we've done is a lot of fundraisers to pull together, not just food, but clothing items. And dude, I'll go clean out my closet and just go down and, give people shoes and jackets and pants. And, I don't need all these things. Right. And I think if anybody listening, I think if you looked around your house, you realize you could help a ton of people, with the things you never wear or that are stuffed in a closet or old comforters, all that stuff. I've filled up my Forerunner many times and it's just stuff that builds up that's just sitting there and it could be warming somebody through the night helping somebody else. So it's just slamming on the brakes for a second and saying, oh, hey, I can do this, and running out the door and doing it. Cause you don't have to look very far for somebody in need, especially now,
Yeah. Such a good way to I love that idea though, too. Just it's easy to just throw it in there and then go donate it somewhere, but who knows where that ends up, but yeah. You're going direct to the source and handing out food and clothes and where people that actually need it, in the moment.
Those are the smiles I'm talking about. I've made friends with many of these people, but, it's when you see somebody light up and it's like a kid at Christmas sometimes, and you can see the emotion when they realize that there are people that care. That's some heavy stuff, man. And it's so good. It's good for them. It's good for whoever, is doing distribution. So just positive stuff, man. And the world definitely needs more positivity. That's for sure.
Couldn't agree more. So you've got this ride coming up in May. Anything else planned for the summer? I know at one point until, you know, the pandemic hit, there was, you know, you guys were heading towards your first, you know, your very own bike show in Denver. And
that was we put a lot of work into that, about a year and a half worth of planning. We had the perfect location. And literally, you know, COVID hit just a few weeks prior to the show date. And it was one of those things like, well, should we do it? We didn't know what to do at the time. And, you know, it became apparent we needed to pull the plug on that and be, you know, as responsible as we can. You know, that's something we've done through COVID. Like I said, this is the first ride I've hosted in over a year. You know, I definitely want to be an example of responsibility. And we did have the show planned. It was called the Vision Moto Show. And we had great support behind it. I think it's too early to even think about anything like that right now, but yeah, I can't wait till we pull it off in the future.
Yeah, I'm excited about it too. I can anticipate it being, you know, nothing. If it's anything like the magazine, it's going to be unique. It's going to be premium. So hopefully things get back to normal here once we get all vaccinated. And
yeah, I definitely hope so. And you know, the show was definitely, you know, set to be unique. It was set to have a storytelling component to it. And that's one thing that, you know, there are great shows all over the country. The one thing we didn't want to do is, this region deserves a show, especially Denver, you know. But we didn't want to do a show just to do a show, because I think we could have done that a long time ago. We wanted to do a show that was special and an extension of our brand and was very unique in concept. So that, you know, I think we can do that in the future. And we're eager to do it. You know, I think community is huge for us. You know, that community is what allows us to do what we're doing. So if there's an opportunity for us to create an amazing community experience, then, that's 100% what we want to do.
Well, hopefully it comes sooner than later. I mean, we all need to get out and interact with a little more with one another. And I mean, I've been holed up here in Idaho since this whole thing started. So I'm sure you're the same.
Yeah. You know, I got kids at home, and it's one of those things where, yeah, I'm held up, you know, have gotten used to it a little bit. But I also, man, just this last week, the sun started shining and it got warm, and, you know, you can get on your motorcycle and cruise anytime, you know, as long as the weather permits. So that's the one thing that has kind of kept me from losing my mind. And, you know, is the ability to escape and go ride motorcycles. That hasn't been taken away from us. And so I'm super fortunate or grateful for that.
Yep. And we, like you and I think talked before, it's just forcing people to be more creative, you know, cause we'll come out of this with some really unique, whether it's events, websites, whatever, you know, like things are just, it's forcing us to all evolve and just think differently.
Yep. And I think you'll agree. You know, it's going to be a while before things seem, you know, somewhat normal. So it's, I don't know. I think going back to like volume 21 and that change, you know, when Ben grounded me and said, "Hey man, let's not freak out here. Let's use this as an opportunity to, you know, reinvent a little bit to
kind of symbolic."
Yeah. So, you know, if I can encourage anybody to try to find the positives in all this, then, you know, please do.
Because that's so true. That's so true. Cause I wouldn't be sitting here doing this podcast, nor would I have probably started my own business back in September of last year. So yes, you know, I think everybody's having to evolve and adapt and,
yeah. You know, and look forward, like, you know, if you can find, I think time is huge, right? Like, and I don't have a whole lot of it. But if you can get those moments of kind of solitude, you know, whether it's business or personal, if you can just try to think forward, you know, to me, that's huge, right? Because then you can really try to figure things out, right? Everybody's different, but you know, use that time to try to see what the world's going to be like in the future, you know? Because I don't know, 6 months ago, you know, I think maybe, you know, people are like, well, this whole deal will be done next year and we'll get back to normal, and it's not like, you know, in downtown Denver, you know, there's so many vacant office buildings. There's, you know, people are moving to the mountains. They're realizing they don't have to work. You know, they think about around the globe, what's going to happen with WeWorks and, you know, offices that used to be cram packed full of people. That I don't see that ever going back to the way it was. And that's probably a positive at some point. You know, for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I don't know. This whole thing is definitely weirds me out. And I've been up and down and up and down, but, it's also, I think, been a blessing in a lot of ways for a lot of people.
No, I like what you said there. Like what I really got out of that is like, you know, just stop living your life on hold, you know, like, cause there's no reason, you know, like if you keep kind of going, okay, next year, maybe it'll be better. Well, if we get the next year, maybe it's not. So just like you said, live a little more in the moment. And if that means evolving, and so be it. But Andrew, always a pleasure talking with you, man. I really appreciate you taking the time to hop on with me today. And anything else you want to share with the listeners out there before I wrap this up?
Yeah, I think I'd like to share the fact that I truly appreciate our friendship over what seems to be almost 20 years, you know, and I appreciate everything that you've done to contribute to Meta. We didn't touch on that, but you know, you're one of our journalists, a great friend, a subscriber. Thank you. I don't know, man. I just appreciate you, Dale, and I appreciate what you're doing with this podcast. And, can't wait till we make another adventure together.
Well, ditto on the, you know, I really appreciate everything you've done for me and, you know, allowing me to contribute to Meta. You know, it was honor the first time, and it's every time I do it. In fact, a little side story on that, I'm excited to, when it arrives, share with you that my story on Wesley Schultz of the Lumineers. I took it to a framing shop, and so I did, I think it was three of the eight, is there four spreads on that one? But I took three of them, and I had them framed in this like really nice frame, and hasn't showed up yet, but I'll be excited to share it with you when it does arrive.
And that's the good stuff, man. That's like, you were so excited at the opportunity to do that feature, and you know, that's what made it magical. I think that was one of the most well-received pieces that's come out of Meta this last year. And you had to kind of work around some COVID stuff to make it happen. You were supposed to be on site. That wasn't an option. You pulled it off. You called me and told me, man, Wesley Schultz is the nicest guy in the world. And man, your excitement around that piece made it what it was. And
it's definitely something I'm proud of. And, but like I said, more than anything, it's been awesome. Appreciate your friendship and, looking forward to having you back on again here soon in the future. And hopefully even getting down there. I was supposed to come down again, you know, in July, but the concert at Red Rocks that we were supposed to come down for got canceled again. But, I still want to come down there, speaking of Wesley, and go out riding, with all you guys and hang out, because I absolutely love Denver. And anytime I can make my way down there, I'm in.
Well, so, you got something to look forward to. We will make it happen when the time is right.
Thanks again, Andrew. That's about it for this episode. Everybody out there, remember to be kind to each other, listen to good music, enjoy life on two wheels, and keep the buzz rolling. Thanks for listening. Awesome. Hey there, two-wheel enthusiasts. It's Dale Spangler, host of the Dirt Buzz. Before we start this episode, I wanted to ask if you would consider becoming a patron of the Dirt Buzz. For as little as $3 per month, you'll help keep the buzz rolling by helping me cover costs associated with producing and hosting this show, such as recording software and equipment, hosting fees, and other administrative costs. The buzz is just getting started, and with your support, I'll continue to bring you weekly episodes featuring the many fascinating people in the world of power sports and the sport of motorcycling as a whole. Head over to patreon.com/dirtbuzz right now, or look for the support the show link at the bottom of each podcast episode description. Once again, thank you for listening and supporting the Dirt Buzz. Enjoy this episode.